Okay, hello friends, and we have been studying the uses of the Om, of the sacred word, for the sake of, what do we have, purification, the casting out and the bringing in of different types of matter, casting out of inadequate matter, the bringing in of more adequate matter. We have the recognition of availability, the Om in the embodiment of ideas and the spread of ideas, and the four aspects of a disciple's training, to be receptive, to develop right intuitive understanding, to embody the ideas received in form, and to use sound, light, and color in the projection of thought so that others may be contacted by the thought. And as DK says, thus are groups gathered, organized, taught, and lifted. Gathered, organized, taught, and lifted. And he, of course, demonstrated how this could be done. There are many other uses of the Om. But we have plenty to deal with. We have to assimilate what we've been given here. And let's see what we have here. Three uses of the, what is this? Sacred word. Okay. And before that, we were speaking of leadership and four factors which had to be developed by those who want to walk more closely with the hierarchy. So many requirements here found. Four objectives for all who seek to cooperate with the Great White Lodge. Well, now we begin program number 33. And we're in the fifth program of Rule 4 on page 141. May I add, and I did read this paragraph, but it was so good somehow that I wanted to read it again. May I add, he says, that the sound is only truly potent when the disciple has learnt to subordinate the lesser sounds. Every configuration, every motion has its sounds. And there has to be, according to Patanjali, the stilling of the lower psychic nature, the stilling of the versatile mental and emotional natures. And I suppose this also applies to physical plane, etheric physical stilling. Only as the sounds he sends forth normally into the three worlds are reduced in volume and in activity, as well as quantity, will it be possible for the sound to be heard and so accomplish its purpose. So, what do we have here? Necessary reduction of sound in volume, quantity, and activity. Okay. Only as the multitude of spoken words is reduced and silence in speech is cultivated. You know, we should study that section on occult silence before Rule 11 in the Rays and the Initiations. It doesn't necessarily mean what at first it appears to mean. He said some of you would be better off if you talked more. But it has to do with the correct dividing of what is said and its proper retention to be released only in the proper circumstances. Only as the multitude of spoken words is reduced and silence in speech is cultivated, the interlude, you know, the speaking as necessary, you might say. So I have something to say about this. Speaking as necessary, under Saturn, ruling the throat center and not the Earth. With Earth, there is unrestrained fecundity. That seems to be one of the qualities of our planet related to the third ray, the multiplicity of forms, and I suppose the multiplicity of sounds. But only as this unregulated multitude is reduced will it be possible for the word, and this is the word of the soul, really, to make its power felt on the physical plane. Otherwise, it will be blocked by multiplicity. Great influence will be blocked by multiplicity, fragmented, blocked or fragmented by multiplicity. Visually, you know, we have the image of the sun on the still waters or the sun on the choppy waters. Only when the many voices of the lower nature and of the environment are silenced will the voice that speaketh in the stillness make its presence felt. The voice that speaketh in the stillness, be still and know that I, whatever that I is, am God. And this is the voice of the silence. Maybe I won't use that so many times, but I will still put it in there. Voice of the silence. From the book, you know, The Secret of the Golden Flower, which is the translation of an old treatise translated by Blavatsky. Only then will the voice that speaketh in the stillness make its presence felt. Only when the sound of many waters dies away in the adjustment of the emotions will the clear note of the God of the waters be heard, let's just say, reflecting the soul and the politic plane, i.e. reflecting love. Okay, so we are being advised that the occultist is an individual more restrained in many ways than the average individual who does not regulate the creativity of thought and of speech. People seldom realize the potency of a word, yet it is stated, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. Without him was not anything made that was made. And the making is one thing. And what about the self-becoming? How is the word related to that process? Because deeper than creativity, where an external agent such as God acts upon matter or some kind of substance to create an arrangement or a form, is the creative self-becomingness of God. So, I'll call it that, the creative self becomingness of God is deeper than simple creativity. When therefore we read those words, our minds go back to the dawn of their creative process when, through the medium of sound, God spoke and the worlds were made. And we have to wonder, you know, is God's, let's call it speaking, an inherent part of the emanative process? Maybe. It has been said that the chief agency by which nature's wheel is moved is a phenomenal, in a phenomenal direction, you know, towards manifestation, that is sound. For the original sound or word sets in vibration the matter of which all forms are made, and initiates that activity which characterizes even the atom of substance. The atom of substance is an activity. Is an activity. Ultimate particle event. So anyway, we have to look at the idea of the creator external to the process of creating and the creator self-becomingly inherent in the process of creating, becoming new forms of itself. The self becoming creator can become new forms of itself in emanation and still remain as it is on the higher planes. Well, this probably we have experienced many times. There cannot be separate beings. That is the assumption. Not in reality, but in Mahamaya, yes, there can be separate beings or existences. The literature and the scriptures of all the ancient nations and great religions bear testimony to the efficacy of sound in producing all that is tangible and visible. God spoke and the worlds were made. Or maybe another way of saying it, God spoke and thus became the worlds, is an alternative to God spoke and the worlds were made. Making and becoming have to be examined. Making and becoming have to be examined because it is the becomingness of God which is more occult. The Hindus say very beautifully that the great singer built the worlds, and the universe is his song, and, you know, Pythagoras could go along with that, the musical, mathematical Pythagoras could give assent to this Hindu idea. Okay. This is another way of expressing the same idea, yes. If this is realized and the science of this concept somewhat understood, the significance of our words and the utterance of speech and sound become almost a momentous happening. I think the true occultist as master must be very careful with regard to what is said. and of course thought. And this we see, in Master Dike's writing. Sound or speech and the use of words have been regarded by the ancient philosophers and are increasingly so regarded by modern thinkers as the highest agent used by man in molding himself and his surroundings. People are always reacting, responding to what is said, if not to what is thought. So often what is said reflects what is thought, but not always. Thought, speech, and the resultant activity on the physical plane complete the triplicity which make a man what he is and place him where he is. Thought, speech, and the resultant activity. So I suppose we have to examine where we are, what we're doing, how we got there, and realize that somehow thought and speech have combined to produce the resultant activity, which is our placement in any particular environment. The purpose of all speech is to clothe thought and thus make our thoughts available to others. And this is part of the, let's call it restorative sharing, bringing the fragmented world back together, but probably as well, but speech as well in earlier involutionary days created the fragments, the fragmentation. Okay. No suggestions. In fragmented. Involutionary. I think, when we speak, we evoke a thought, unless we're just making a sound, you know, and even then some kind of state of existence is suggested. When we speak, we evoke a thought and make it present, and we bring that which is concealed within us into audible expression. Speech reveals, so, you know, speech is revelatory of that which is the hidden quality within us. Okay, when we speak, we evoke a thought. We call it forth and make it present, and we bring that which is concealed into audible expression. Speech reveals, and right speech can create a form of beneficent purpose, just as wrong speech can produce a form which has a malignant objective. So, obviously, how very responsible we must be. Without realizing this, however, ceaselessly and irresponsibly, day after day, we speak. We use words, we multiply sounds, and surround ourselves with form worlds of our own creation. Which imprison us, though we do not realize it. Is it not essential, therefore, that before we speak, we should think, thus remembering the injunction, you must attain to knowledge ere you can attain to speech? Well, this is, I've often found that with fifth-ray people, there is a hesitation of thought before speaking. Others begin to speak even before their thought catches up with them. Having thought Let us then choose the right words to express the right thought, attempting to give correct pronunciation, proper values, and total, true, tonal quality to every word we utter. Good Lord. Of course, I remember these sections, but how very exacting is the are the requirements here given? How very exacting are the requirements here given? Having thought, let us then choose the right words to express the right thought. But we might say the plan inductive thought, the thought which in any circumstance will advance the divine plan. Then will our spoken word create a thought form which will embody the idea we have in our minds. Maybe it will be an idea, maybe it will be a form of thought which is a little vague or is abstract and which needs a thought form. Then, too, will our words carry no discord. So he is suggesting harmonious speech. Of course, it could be interpreted as discord by an unready listener, especially if the purpose of the thought is to disabuse a listener of some energy condition which is preventing progress. Then too will our words carry no discord, but will add their quota to the great harmonizing chord or unifying word, which it is the function of mankind ultimately to utter. Well, you know, Saturn is the planet of caution. As Saturn is the planet of caution, we can see its application to the regulation of speech. Wrong speech separates, and it is interesting to bear in mind that the word, the symbol of unity, is divine, whereas speech in its many diversifications is human. So we have basically the one is divine, and the many are, well, he says here, human, or of a lesser degree of divinity, or even profane, which means, you know, outside the wall of the temple, and therefore not as sacred or holy. As evolution proceeds and the human family rises into its true position in the great plan of the universe, and, you know, is it the grand entirety? Here we may mean solar system. Right and correct speech will be increasingly cultivated because we shall think more before we utter words. Or as a great teacher has said, quote, through meditation we shall rectify the mistakes of wrong speech. And the significance of word forms, true and correct sounds, and vocal quality will become ever more apparent. So certainly DK has called our attention to the seriousness of correct speech. And shall we remember this? And shall we attempt to use correct speech in all our circumstances and relationships? This is the question, because it's possible to read so much, but not carry out, unfortunately, what is read. Okay, so where are we here? Sound or speech? Okay. So sound is the word of importance here. And as occultists in training, our attitude toward the production of sound must become highly regulated for the right reasons. The second word of importance in this fourth rule is the word lights, sound, light, and vibration. So, you know, let's just say the three words, and I believe it's vibration, is it not? Yeah, sound, light, and vibration, right. The three words to which we are attending in this rule four are sound, light, and vibration. So the second word of importance here is the word light, which is substance, which is matter, which is the very material out of which any universe is made. There are different sequences in the order, you know, in cosmic fire we are given a sequence, vibration, light, sound, color. And that's true enough with regard to progression on the planes, but with regard to the creative process, sound, light, and vibration is the sequence given. First the sound, and then the first effect of sound, the pouring forth of light causing revelation of the thought form. So there is a fiat, a sounded fiat goes forth, and that let there be light, and only then, after the sound, does the light appear. Well, we'll have to re-experience all of this, you know, in our own creative process. You can question the matter. Internally, some things may come to light, and then we may sound certain words which bring that lighted form or relationship into expression. We have to be flexible as we consider these sequences, but certainly sound, light, and vibration are such a sequence. Now, you know, as stated in Cosmic Fire, the law of vibration is the first systemic law of vibration. Light is related to the second ray, the ray of light-bearing influence. Sound is definitely related to hearing and the third ray. So vibration, light, sound, and color to the fourth ray, and that is a legitimate sequence. Now, light is known by that, by what is revealed. And that is interesting. You know, I questioned earlier, do we see light? Loosely speaking, we talk about seeing light all the time, but light is that which makes the invisible appear. And to an extent, that is also true of sound. But a hidden light may shine and bring into noticeability that which has always been there. You know, you face a dark room, totally dark. You don't know what is there. And let's say the hallway in back of you is dark as well. Then you turn on your flashlight or your torch, and a beam of light appears, but its main purpose is to reveal the contents of the room. And the question is, would we see that light if the medium through which it was passing were completely pure? That is a question. And the first and obvious answer seems to be, well, yes, we would see light. We look at the sun. We look at a street light. We look at any source of light, and we seem to see the light. Matter of fact, sometimes we can stare into the light so much that we don't even see what it is intended to reveal. Nevertheless, DK says here, light is known by what is revealed. The absence of light produces the fading away into apparent non-existence of the phenomenal world. You know, we're into matters here, I think, that are related deeply to the fifth ray. Actually, if we were to analyze carefully this particular subject. And yet, you know, the interesting thing is that even though that which the light reveals would seem to fade away, it still exists, and within it, and it is in a state of condensed light, even though it is non-radiatory. If we were able to apply the proper formula to it, the proper technology, that which composes the hidden object would suddenly come to light in a great display of light and heat. I'm talking about atomic reactions here. So I'm going to have to give this some thought, and I think maybe we all are. I am staring right now at a source of light above my computer, and it does seems quite visible, not because of what's in the air, but simply in its own right and in contrast to everything around it. So, you know, from a practical perspective, it seems we see light, and light also reveals what we do not see. So, you know, let's say, practically considered, we see light, and light also reveals that which has been hidden before the light shone upon it. Okay, practically. And yet, you know, and the other thing, light is matter, and water is matter, and light is water. You know, there are various equivalences here. Light is not only that which shows what is hidden, but light is the appearance of anything, the emergence of anything. If it does exist, it is light. So I use that word exist in a specific way. Existence is apparent separation from absolute infinity. Of course, the supranumeral light we can speculate about. In other words, how does God, the absolute deity, see? We get into deeply metaphysical issues here, but existence is apparent separation from absolute infinitude, and if anything emerges from merges into Mahamayavic isolation, I'll call it that, that emergence must be light. So we have various ways of looking at the nature of light. As I say, the whole universe is Mahamaya, and whatever is in universe is at least apparently or Mahamayavically separated from the absolute infinitude. In other words, it is a finitude. So let's just say, what do I dare say? Okay. I dare say that all emergent finitudes are light. And of course, you know, some of this sounds a little bizarre, but we could discuss the matter and see that if we go deep enough, our conventional assessments of what is light, what is sound, and so forth deepens. And we begin to wonder about what these things really are in their supra-numinal state. And by supra-numinal, I mean the causative nature of absolute infinitude beyond the existence of any universe. That is, when any universe, a universe, does not exist. In other words, we're in the realm of zero and not of one. And all the absolutely infinite variety of absolute infinitude somehow sums to a great zero, which is the absoluteness itself. So the metaphysics proposed there really needs to be examined, and maybe this is not the moment. This is a more practical book, and in the book that I am writing and intend to write, I'll try to give offer as deep an understanding as I possibly can of some of these foundational building blocks, foundational factors. Sounds a little more dignified. Foundational factors in creation and super creation. Supra-numinality is, super-numinality is super-creation or creativity. But I fear to wander too far afield, as is this third-rate tendency that can get a hold of me and rapidly pull anything I say towards irrelevance with respect to our present subject. Anyway, the thought form created by the sound is intended to be a source of revelation. And this is simply, again, we are speaking of speech. It must reveal truth. That is how things actually are within the realm of the archetype, rather than some fantasy or fanciful configuration. You know, truth is beheld by the single eye. And if limited eyes see, that which they see cannot be truth, but merely the actuality of their perception. Are we here in the Virgo moon? Or is this the Libra Moon? Oh. Let's just see. I think, yes, we're still in the Virgo Moon. So, interesting. I was being told by someone who studied the subject that philosophers are frequently found with Taurus and Virgo. You might not think it, you know. Immanuel Kant, after all, was a Taurian individual, but the ray is what gave him his mode of writing, thinking, writing, presenting. Anyway, the thought form created by sound is intended to be a source of revelation. Now we can bring this right down to the human level and bring an aspect of reality to cognizance of the onlooker. I suppose without sound, we could also, via some kind of internal television, reveal the same via some kind of internal television. Could reveal the same. Hence the second quality of the thought form in its highest use is that it brings light to those who need it. The thought form brings light to those who need it, to those who walk in the darkness. And we might say that sound brings a form into a state of lighted revelation. It also creates form. Sound works in light, we might say, and creates that which can be seen or registered. Now, if we really start getting into this subject, as DK would say, a treatise of many volumes could be written on this subject. I begin to understand how and why he speaks that way. Because, when you start thinking about something, a whole range of possibilities expands, and you know that in time and space, it will take a certain length of time to present it. But he says, your ideal not here with light as the soul, cosmically or individually, is a little different, okay, because we may not see the soul light as it reveals. We may not see soul light as it performs its revelatory function. I touch not upon light as the universal note, second aspect of divinity. Note. So that when he says, when DK gives the sequence, vibration, light, sound, color, he is in order according to the aspects of divinity, aspects, AODS, I wonder, aspects of divinity, which he is here suggesting. We have light as the universal second aspect. And yet, if you look at the second plane of the cosmic physical plane, we have the Akasha, which is related to sound. So, there's a certain interplay here between sound and light, and they seem to, change positions depending upon the context we are discussing. So he's closing off certain of the greater speculations into which perhaps I mistakenly was lured only to find that I need far more, quote, time to unfold my thoughts about these things. For light is not only that which reveals, but it is that which is revealed, as all in-universe things are condensed light. Well, and then we could get into a question, is sound light? Is light sound? You know, ultimately it's all vibration. And you begin to wonder about the presence of a non-vibratory state, because there must be a state in which there is no division. And division, or fragmentation, or number is necessary for vibration to occur. But what about in the state where you cannot separate one thing from another, a state which is seamless? Well, my thought has always gone in that direction, but I don't think I've ever been able to quite follow through to a desirable conclusion. Limitation. I see only in these instructions, seek only in these instructions to deal with the aspect of truth which will make the aspirant a practical worker, and so enable him to work with intelligence. Okay, so DK has excluded certain possibilities that he might get into with great interest, but he's narrowing down his objective to that which is manageable by the aspirant. The objective of MDK is to discuss that which is manageable by the aspirant who may read these words and attempt to apply them. His main work, and increasingly he will find this to be so, is to create thought forms to carry revelation to thinking human beings. All right. This is the main work of the aspirant. Let's take a look here. Main work of the aspirant. Well, we do that, you know, in our school work, in our conversations, in our webinars, in our groupings. We do something of this nature, all of us do. Our main work, and increasingly we will find this to be so, is to create thought forms to carry revelation to thinking human beings, you know. We're not dealing with those who are strictly emotionally polarized, because they would not really respond to thought forms on the level of thought. They would respond to them perhaps emotionally only, and not necessarily intelligently, therefore. To do this, he must work occultly and through the sound of his breathed forth work, or is it word? I don't know where to go for that. Maybe into another book which would reveal it. Through the truth revealed in form, will he carry light and illumination into the dark places of the earth? Sometimes you think, oh, Master DK, you shouldn't be using a word like work when you really mean word. And then you go to the original and you find that in all probability that's exactly the intention. So occult work lies before us. We do breathe into manifestation our work, and it does manifest, and it sounds, and it is light itself. Let's just say that's interesting, you know, that this is, I think, important. Condensed light which is matter in its usual form, actually sounds, condensed light sounds. Every object has its sound. So light is sounding. Now, as to the real implications of such a statement, this will take some delving into. I found in my book on infinitization that towards the end of the writing, it started to go so fast that I found many unexpected equivalences, things that were related that I had never thought of as being related before that point. I put them down, but perhaps did not really develop the relationship. But everything we witness and everything, another way of doing this is self-objectivity sounds. Self-objectivity sounds. Well, that's getting into the kind of thing I was doing years ago, and I thought it was opening up a new world. I wonder if it was. I think so, in a way. You know, light is matter, and matter is produced by self-perception. Uh-oh, I'm off and running. Is produced by self-perception of the infinite absolute deity. Matter is produced by self-perception of the absolute deity. That which is revealed is light, and the revealing agent is self-consciousness, which also can be understood as light. So, you know, I have a warning flash here. Stay away from this now. Stay away. Maybe in that final book that I hope to complete. Well, what is completion? But in that final book, basically Seeds of the Infinite, I've already got well over 10,000 seed thoughts collected. Maybe I'll get into some of these, deeply metaphysical issues, but unless all of that leads to identification, to being the thing seen or registered, it will be useless. Okay, so then he finally makes his thought form live through the power of his own assurance, spiritual understanding, and vitality. This is very interesting. Now, this would take us into the realm of white magic, to create the living thought form. So, to create a living and precipitated thought form takes us into the technicalities of white magic. Thus, the significance of the third word, vibration, appears. Yeah. So we're sort of reversing our trend here. Instead of vibration, light, sound, color, vibration is the third in the sequence. There's some kind of law of mutability in all of this. And according to our different perspectives, so different sequences appear. His message is heard, for it is sounded forth. It carries illumination, for it conveys the truth and reveals reality, and it is of vital, can we say vibratory? It is of vital import, for it vibrates with the life of the Creator and is held in being as long as his thought and sound and intelligence animate it. Again, a statement of great importance. Every one of these, I'm sorry I've been away from this book for so long. His message is heard, for it is sounded forth, and hearing is the very first sense. It carries illumination, and it is light that we've been in. It carries illumination, for meaning it brings other things to light, for it conveys the truth and reveals reality. So sound reveals, the right kind of sounding brings reality to light. I want to just put the right kind of sounding brings reality to light, i.e. into appearance. It is of vital import. It's an active agent, really, for it vibrates with the life of the Creator and is held in, I would say, existence, at least, you know, in my terminology, but okay, being is good, is held in being as long as his thought and sound and intelligence animate it. And very interesting, you know, through the use of the word animate, the soul factor is brought into consideration. This is true of a message, of an organization, and of all forms of life, which are but the embodied ideas. All forms of life are but the embodied ideas of a cosmic or human creator. They are, light reveals them, these forms, and they are also condensed or precipitated light. Well, goodness. Students would find it of value to take these three vital words, sound, light, and vibration, and trace their relation in all embodied thought forms, a cosmos, a plane, a kingdom in nature. All of these are thought forms, a race, a nation, a human being. Consider the diverse groups of creating agencies, Soto Logoi, Soto Angels, human beings and others. Consider the spheres of the creative process and see how true the old commentary is when it says, okay, and here is where we will stop. So this will be the end of A Treatise on White Magic, number 32. Rule 4.5, I certainly hope so. This time I remembered it was 141 where we started. It's, yes, it's 4.5 and it's number 33. So I believe we are at, what page are we at? Oh, I can't even tell. So I'll have to. This is the end of 33, rule 4.5, and we're on page 145. So page 141 to 145. And here we have the beginning of a treatise on white magic, number, this was 33, I believe. And this is going to be number 34, rule 4.6. I hope so. Page 145. So let's just check again. I will somehow go through this ridiculous performance. This is 4.5 and it takes us to 145. Okay. And now we're on 34 and 4.6. Yeah, that's where we are. Okay, 145 to whatever. Now, this is a long rule. But I'm sure that if we think deeply, which, you know, we're almost compelled to do as we pay very close attention to what Master DK has said, we will realize the importance of what is being said, the importance to our creative life. As a becoming a white magician, and all members of the hierarchy are white magicians in some degree, and we are slowly becoming members of the spiritual hierarchy of our planet. Okay, everybody, lots of love. We'll see you as soon as I can. We'll see about other things to be done. This morning I pressed the wrong button on a broadcast, and I'm paying for that with an additional 2 hours of work. So the long and short of is don't meditate when you're being the engineer. Okay, see you soon. Bye-bye.